Today, when the music stops, who's going to be left holding the baby? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Back in April, the IMF released their Global Financial Stability Report with a focus on risks in the financial system. This time, drawing, they say, on a series of discussions with banks, securities firms, asset management companies, hedge funds, standard setters, financial consultants, pension funds, central banks, national treasuries, and academic researchers. Interestingly, this got little coverage at the time, partly because there were other reports from the IMF as part of its spring meetings, and superficially at least, they'd repeated messages made before. Plus, the contents itself are rather technical and hard to follow. But today, I wanted to revisit this report because I think they spotlight some important issues. At its heart, the issue is one of risk transference in the financial system. And the fact is, it is households who are on the receiving end. If you have time, read the entire 106 pages, as it will shock you. They discussed the so-called late-stage cycle of the global economy and said that attempts to bolster growth and financial stability are loading in greater and greater risks. Separately, they also examined the dynamics of the capital markets and specifically the rise of electronic trading and EFTs, plus the housing market. We may come back to those in the later show. But they started by recounting that the market falls last year had been matched by forceful responses from policymakers in the first part of this year. Of course, the Fed changed direction in terms of interest rate policy and quantitative tightening, as we've been reporting recently. The impact has been obvious on global stock markets, which have been rising, while the US yield curve has dropped considerably despite the inversion between short and long-term rates, which some believe signal a recession ahead. Why would you buy long-term bonds if the overnight rate is higher? Tightening has been replaced by more support across many countries, but they say that despite this recent improvement, financial markets remain susceptible to a sudden tightening in financial conditions. Potential triggers include a sharp repricing of risk, an intensification of trade tensions, a further slowdown in global economic activity, or political shocks. And they introduced a new framework based on data from 29 systemically important economies back to 2000 and assess the level of vulnerability across regions and sectors, which include banks, non-bank financial institutions, sovereigns, firms, and households. Government debt is especially exposed. They say that sovereign and corporate sector vulnerabilities have increased since the global financial crisis, while vulnerabilities remain elevated in other financial sectors. And the report identified that sovereign vulnerabilities are elevated in both advanced and emerging market economies, especially in the euro area and emerging markets other than China. Corporate debt has expanded faster than GDP in several systemically important economies. And we know that in the US, corporates have been borrowing to buy back shares rather than for good economic outcomes. The IMF says that some banking systems need to continue to strengthen their balance sheets. And it's worth noting that both Australia and Canada have high price-to-book ratios, but relatively low Tier 1 capital ratios, which means that risks are extended here. And finally, they say that investment funds who are invested in less liquid assets have experienced higher redemption values during recent stress. And then they introduced a framework showing the interlinkages in the financial system. This chart is worth looking at in detail because it shows how households are the bedrock who will ultimately pick up the pieces if the financial system crashes, whether it be through sovereign debt defaults, bank funding costs, insurers, and via bail-in, higher taxes, or loan defaults. In fact, all roads lead back to the hapless consumer. They say there is still a risk that the sovereign financial sector nexus could be reinvigorated. The nexus could spread sovereign strains across the financial system through a complex web of interactions and negative feedback loops that can be summarized into three main types of channels. Firstly, financial channels of mark-to-market losses on bank and insurer's bond holdings, depicted by the red arrows and channels. Secondly, macro financial channels, where sovereign and bank shocks spill over to companies and households via an economic slowdown or high interest rates, the green arrows and channels. And thirdly, bond demand channels that can exacerbate increase in bond yields, that's the blue arrows and channels. These channels operate over different horizons. For example, we know that corporate debt in the US has been growing, and they show that the relative proportion of debt used for investment and research and development has stayed roughly the same, but more is now being used to fund payouts by way of dividends, share buybacks, and executive payments, plus mergers and acquisitions. As the IMF report says, in many sectors, payouts were also financed with borrowing despite already elevated debt ratios. But the next question is, who is lending these funds, which are often coming via the corporate bond markets? The surprising truth is that in the US at least, non-banks, which include institutional investors, insurers, hedge funds, finance companies and superannuation funds, are funding corporates. Banks and security firms are funding less than 10% of primary issuance in 2018, and the nature of these bonds are high yield and leveraged bonds. In other words, insurers, pension funds and super funds are investing your money into high leveraged corporates who are using these funds to mainly pass dividends and capital to their shareholders. And this is high risk and unproductive. These corporates are not investing in the future growth of their business, rather they are using cheap debt to pay high dividends to stakeholders. Or take another example closer to home. Households in Australia have been encouraged to borrow big to buy property. They have been given big loans, perhaps bigger than they should have, and are up to their eyes in debt, which is just about serviceable at the moment given low interest rates and unemployment. These support the banks as they grow their books, but of course higher non-performing loans or high interest rates would hit consumers and banks hard. Plus, the states have benefited from high stamp duty revenues. Victoria reported a significant fall in their budget yesterday. As the IMF says, elevated house prices at risk signal possible downside risks to economic growth and financial stability. Households actually are the bedrock of the financial system in that they pay taxes, take loans, have savings and superannuation, etc. But it also means that one way or another, when things go bad, households will pick up the tab. It might be direct if they default on their loans, thanks to higher unemployment or interest rates. It might be via lower than expected superannuation returns, failed insurers, or worse still, deposit bail-ins. And of course, if the economy tanks, then eventually the government debt has to be repaid from, guess who? Taxpayers. The system is in essence protecting governments, banks and corporates at the expense of households, who indeed are potentially left holding the baby in a crisis. So in a way, you could say that while profits are privatized, risks are being socialized. And that asymmetry really concerns me. If you want more proof, at a forum in Washington, D.C., former Bank of England Deputy Governor Paul Tucker, who was heavily involved in devising bail-in, bluntly stated that the whole purpose of bail-in was to lump all of the risks of the bank's gambling on to ordinary households.
I'll repeat the questions just to make sure everyone hears them. So who's writing this effective insurance policy in the entire system? I guess AIG was doing this before. Perhaps they're no longer available. I'm not sure. But yes, yeah, so who is... Everyone have a go on all these questions. We'll go this way, this way.
So first of all, and I hope we'll see this in Brisbane, and if not afterwards, you absolutely can't allow banks and shadow banks to hold it. That leaves you with...
Hedge funds?
I'm just going to get to a point about the economics of this. So that leaves you with insurance companies, pension funds, mutual funds, etc. And when I've said that in other groups, people have said, my goodness, it's households. Well, households are going to take the losses as taxpayers. Well, there are only households. This is all about agency problems. I mean, the ultimate judgment that's going on here is, do we think there is going to be more discipline through households as taxpayers taking the losses and hiring supervisors? Or do we think there is going to be more market discipline by households as beneficiaries of insurance policies and pension funds taking it that way and hiring asset managers and others. And one reason for believing that's better is that at least you've doubled up. You've still got the supervisors, but now you've got BlackRock and PIMCO as well. But, you know, do the losses flow through to households? Yes.
He was admitting that requiring any other entities, such as banks and shadow banks, to buy these bonds will spread a wildfire of risks in the financial system. Tucker declared that the risks will only be contained by households alone bearing the losses. First of all, and I hope we all see this in Brisbane, you absolutely cannot allow banks and shadow banks to hold it. So that leaves you with insurance companies, pensions, superannuation funds, mutual funds, etc. And when I've said that, in other groups, people have said, goodness, it's households. Well, there are only households. Do you want all of the risks to fall back on Wall Street firms? Back then to the stability report, the IMF then outlines the risks in the system and how this might play out. Looking ahead, they say, there is the risk that positive investor sentiment could deteriorate rapidly, leading to a sharp tightening of financial conditions. Possible triggers include, firstly, a sharper than expected global growth slowdown. Disappointing economic data released could lead to further earnings downgrades, poor credit performance, and a repricing of risk assets. A lack of policy space, monetary or fiscal, to accommodate adverse shocks would amplify this risk. Secondly, unexpected shifts to a less dovish outlook for monetary policy in advanced economies. Investor sentiment has improved since the Federal Reserve signaled a change in its stance and markets have rallied. A change in expectations stemming from stronger than expected economic data releases, or the possibility that investors have taken too benign a view regarding the outlook for monetary policy in the United States, could lead to a sharp repricing of risk assets. In this event, pressures on emerging markets could resume through disruptions in cross-border capital flows. Thirdly, protracted trade tensions, expectations of a positive outcome in the US-China trade negotiations have lifted asset valuations in trade-dependent sectors, even though China's export orders have ebbed. An escalation of trade tensions, they say, would likely trigger a renewed sell-off. And lastly, Brexit. A stalemate in the Brexit process threatens to unsettle financial markets, damage investors' confidence, adversely affect business investment, and give rise to some operational and contractual uncertainties in Europe and the United Kingdom. So, in a financially connected world, households will carry the can. This, to me, is an important issue because it becomes clearer by the day that whatever they may say, governments, central banks, and financial firms are all protecting each other without due regard to households, who are, in their minds, simply cannon fodder. That is the harsh truth at the center of financial stability. And when the music stops, households will be left holding the baby. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll talk to you again next time.